This is the Saxo Market Call, the daily financial markets podcast, across asset classes and around the world.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It's Wednesday, May 17th, 2023. And it's kind of funny because I'm looking through some stuff this morning and we've talked about narrative-wise, you know, this indecision we have in the equity market still locked in this range, especially in the S&P 500. And notable, perhaps, that it is the S&P 500 more so than the NASDAQ. And wondering, is this about the sort of pent-up uncertainty around the economic cycle? The Fed has now reached pause. What do we do next? Is the economy going to continue to tick along? Or do we see further confirmation of recession? That certainly wasn't the case in the specific data point of retail sales out of the U.S. yesterday for April. But we need to go back to another phenomenon we discussed a bit, but not in depth. And I'm not going to go into depth today. It's a very technical issue. But I'm just coming across some really interesting research. There was one from J.P. Morgan 2 days ago in particular, but I've also delved into a couple of Twitter accounts with more expert options people. And I do mention options here because it's about the 0 days to expire phenomenon. The S&P 500 options that expire every day and the trading where, some are arguing who it is, but apparently it's mostly institutional investors that are doing this, or investors, traders, selling volatility at the start of the day and then covering it later in the day. And the Bloomberg had a brief article discussing the JP Morgan piece and says that there's evidence in the charts. You see gains and losses, quote unquote, doubling back on themselves and mean reverting early in the session, very dominated by these 0 days to expiry flows where the options expire later in the day. And then you get more of a trending behavior later in the session. This is all very technical. Maybe we'll cover it a bit more in depth on a future podcast, but it's just to make you aware of the phenomenon. I'll send out a report on Twitter on the at Saxo Market Call Twitter account, an interesting thread. But I suspect we're getting to some sort of breaking point with this type of behavior. We can't simply stay in this bottled up range forever. And I wonder if I don't know what the shock could be, or even it has to be a shock, or if it could just be a market move or somebody taking a larger position. But I suspect we're going to break this very tight range at some point. I don't know what you say to that, Peter. And the difficult thing could be, is this going to go on for another 2 weeks, or could it be on Monday or today? It's hard to quantify, but I think that must be the phenomenon that is creating this very unusual behavior in the market.
Yeah, it's for sure a very tight trading range, and we are looking for that next catalyst. Wondering what that will be. It's a little bit of a catalyst yesterday with the U.S. retail sales figures, because when that figures came over the wire, it was completely at odds with what we had just got an hour earlier from Home Depot. The Home Depot results showing that, you know, a broad-based deterioration in demand for home improvement materials and what have you, screws and hammers. So Home Depot changed their outlook from, you know, a flat on comparable revenue growth of the fiscal year to -2% to -5%. And that got people and the market a little bit nervous what to expect now from the U.S. retail sales. But then the figures from April showed, when you exclude auto and gas, that they were quite strong. Households are hanging on to spending here. And immediately you saw some of that rate cuts by December that is priced into the market was being priced a little bit out again. And the U.S. equity markets were lower. We had the lowest close in the S&P 500 continuous futures series since May 4th. So a little bit of weakness there. I wonder whether that could be, I think a lot of the equity pricing is linked to, you know, how the market is also perceiving any potential rate cuts. And then you had Bostic saying, I know he's not a voting member, but he said, I'm not even contemplating, as we talked about yesterday, not even contemplating cutting the Fed funds rate. And who else was it? Mester said that the Fed funds rate was not even restrictive enough, given the data points they're seeing. Yeah. So, I mean, there are so many things up in the air. A lot of confusion, also a lot of confusion around China. I don't have the stocks to watch today, so I might actually just add a little bit of comment on China, because we got results from Baidu, and we will have results later today from Tencent. And Baidu was confirming and indicating this thing that, you know, the marketing advertising spending is actually increasing in China, suggesting that a lot of the consumer-facing companies in China are expecting a pickup in growth. But again, that is at odds with what we are hearing from other parts of the Chinese economy, especially the one in manufacturing and industrial, and talks about, you know, we need more stimulus in China. So everywhere I look, I see confusion. I see people with very different views. And right now I have the opinion that everyone can find 30 indicators that can prove their point, whether you want to be a bull or a bear.
Yeah. Admittedly, on Mr. specifically, she is a known hawk, but still, in the end, the vote will be mostly up to Powell, but it is very interesting to see this ongoing tension between what the Fed is saying and what the market is saying. So your next slide there, looking at the European equity market, which has performed so strongly, it was performing much stronger in the U.S. market for much of the year. What's your take here on the strong tailwinds we're seeing?
Yeah, it's and we can tie it in, as again, I don't have the stocks to watch slide today, so we can tie it into the report that we got from Siemens this morning. So Siemens is exceeding estimates for their fiscal Q2, which ended in March. They exceed on orders, on comparable revenue growth, they exceed on net income, they're lifting the comparable revenue growth target for the fiscal year from their previous forecast. And the Siemens CEO is out saying that they're seeing a super cycle in climate change related investments. A lot of demand for industrial components. We talked about Siemens Energy the other day, you know, almost 50% growth in orders for and revenue for grid technology. And I wrote a piece yesterday, which I called The Stars of Europe's Equity Market, because Europe has been outperforming the US equity market since late 2021. The interest rate shock, the comeback of the physical world, inflation in particular, have been playing into the hands of Europe. And then also the underlying growth right now in the US seems to be quite resilient and more robust than expected. So and the equity market has responded to that as well. And I put it there on slide 3, the 12-month forward earnings estimates developments for this year. You can see how the stock 600 index is pulling away from the S&P 500. So you can find it. You can either Google or go to analysis.sax. So it's called The Stars of Europe's Equity Market. I also highlight some of the companies that have been behind this very, very positive market we are seeing in Europe.
Yeah, and then over in the FX market with that retail sales data point you mentioned earlier, we did see U.S. Treasury yields teasing higher. The 30-year actually broke its range high, but that move was kind of tamed, as were the moves in Treasuries elsewhere. But we have a 20-year bond auction today from the Treasury, by the way. But the dollar seems to be continue to rise here, and almost seems to be rising independent of other coincident indicators. I think some of this is just the mean reversion we've talked about. If you look over in the U.S. futures market, the euro long is extremely extended by relative to historic norms. I think the market got all it could out of that sort of relative spread trade between the ECB and the Fed, which has them at parity in terms of their policy rate by late next year. I think that's only possible if the U.S. is in a U.S. only, some kind of specific emergency situations relative to Europe. But be that as it may, euro dollar mean reverting, testing the local lows, this Q108.50 area. And we're seeing that across a number of dollar pairs where, you know, if this dollar strength continues, it's starting to break things on the chart. So 108.50 in euro dollar, the dollar yen chart I put there on slide 4, 137 and change is the 200-day moving average, clearly a resistance point on the prior two rallies, and the actual highs being a bit higher towards 138. But that's certainly bears watching. And more specifically and closer to the actual tipping point is something like cable. So sterling versus the dollar, hitting on 124.50 area, which was a key range high, and suggests maybe the risk of some more significant capitulation, as it would sort of erase all that attempts to get above that level, which was a sort of a double top area for that currency pair. And just yesterday, just to recall, the payroll and claims numbers, which were terrible yesterday for April out of the UK, saw a sterling sell-off, and then bizarrely it rallied back to above where it was versus the dollar later in the session, only to have that rally completely erased, and we're back to where it was when it was selling off. A very odd experience, in my view, but I'm also focused on sterling versus the dollar. And then the Canadian dollar strong on a firm CPI number. But Aussie is suffering, and Ola, when I look at your next slide there, slide 5, I can see why, because Aussie very sensitive to commodity prices. Copper hitting new lows. We had the weak Chinese, or weaker than expected, especially in the industrial production from China this week. And gold below $2,000 here for the first time, and I think it's just about 2 weeks. So it's not looking terribly bright for the metals space here.
No, and for the commodities sector as a whole, John, we are most certainly in risk-off mode. And but when we have some of these outside developments unfolding right now, with the as you mentioned, the economic data from China not really pointing in the right direction, we got yields moving higher. We had a breakout in the 30-year bond yields yesterday. We got the reduced expectation for rate cuts before year end. The debt ceiling debacle and the dollar strength that has also emerged in the past week here, all just adding to some downward pressure. The copper market is the one that is mostly impacted right now. We corrected 61.8% of the recent run up from September October last year. So really, it needs to find some support here fairly soon. Otherwise, there may be some additional momentum selling coming into this market. Gold's biggest problem right now is basically its recent popularity. A lot of length has been added by hedge funds, and as we start to challenge these levels around the 1980 area, if we do, then that could add some additional selling. Simply not because the outlook has changed, simply because positions are becoming unprofitable and need to be reduced. So I think that's a lot of the driving we're seeing right now. Not necessarily a change in direction, but longs that are getting that needs to be reduced at this point in time.
Yeah, and then over at crude oil, still just hanging in there. We bounced quite strongly off the lows, but that bounce faded, and now we're just stuck here, sort of mid-range of that bounce off the lows, at least in the case of WTI on the chart I'm seeing there on slide six. What's the next focus to get something going either way in crude oil?
Well, I think what Peter talked about earlier, confusion, is most certainly also a valid description of the oil market right now, because we have the short-term drivers, which is most certainly the lack of growth or lack of pickup in China, seen through the numbers. But at the same time, we just had the three monthly oil market reports out, and as you can see on the small insert there on slide six, the IEA actually yesterday increased their demand to 2.2 million barrels growth this year, more or less in line with OPEC. That will take global consumption to a record. That really doesn't tie in with the weakness that we're seeing in prices. So something's got to give, and over the coming months, that obviously will be a very interesting one to watch. I do note that the refinery margins are picking up, basically meaning that the weakness we've seen in crude oil recently has not been copied by additional weakness or similar weakness in the gas oil and the diesel and the gasoline futures markets. That does indicate that we potentially could see some support start to emerge from that front, basically these levels are low enough to attract some demand. Also, just ahead of today's weekly inventory report from the EIA, we are seeing the API reporting another stock build in crude oil, but at the same time also another drop in gasoline and distillates. So it looks like for now where distillates were pulling, dragging the market lower last month, potentially could be the area that may start to add some support back into the market.
All right, now let's go forward to the earnings watch. So yes, you mentioned yesterday, Peter, the Home Depot numbers disappointing, their outlook disappointing. That's pretty easy to write off in a way, because the Home Depot is so linked to the huge surge in housing from the pandemic era, very, very low rates. So that sort of area of the economy could still do with some more normalization and still, I guess, be on the old trend. I'm a bit more curious in the likes of a Target, which is sort of a middle range a general store versus Walmart. It's a bit like Walmart, but it tends to be a higher income clientele. And then have what Walmart reports. So those two reporting, that's a lot of retail sales in the U.S. and hearing what they have to say in their guidance. Wouldn't you agree?
Absolutely, John. And I mean, look at the expectations there for Target over the next three quarters. So the quarter they will be reporting today is for the quarter that ended in April. So that's pretty fresh numbers, only 17 days old figures. So that in itself is very interesting. And you can see the expectations for revenue to be down 1%, and then not really kicking back into positive growth in the next two quarters. I mean, if you factor in a headline inflation, let's say of 5%, in this time period on a year-to-year basis, I mean, that's a significant quantity contraction. And I think this is part of the confusion as well, and also for China, that, you know, the high inflation and the reallocation and by households in the US and Europe is causing a decline in manufactured goods. And that hits China harder because it is a manufacturing economy. So because it means that your factories are more idle, you don't need as many workers. So you might lay off some of that. That has an impact on income. So you might be selling to the US and Europe in nominal terms at fine levels, but you know, your quantities are going down. It means less efficiency or utilization of your capacity. So I think that's the story. And as you said as well with Target, it's higher up in the price range. So there's obviously a substitution effect going on in the US, middle class. So you would expect Walmart to do better than Target at this point in the cycle. And then of course we mentioned Tencent. You could argue in the old days we would have mentioned Cisco as well, but this I think Cisco is just slipping into, you know, a period where it's really not very interesting. Otherwise, someone listening to this will have to write us an email and tell me why Cisco is something that is worth talking about. But it was a big company in the past, but it's not something we talk about. And I should mention, we have C Limited here on the calendar, but they actually did report ahead of schedule yesterday. So and their results were a little bit of a mixed bag, and the shares took quite a beating in the session.
Yeah, I mentioned China there as well. There was this report out, I think it was yesterday, that their youth employment hit a new record at above 20%. I couldn't find anywhere in the article what they define as youth. I imagine it must be quite young for that level of unemployment. But it's remarkable when you have China with its demographic profile reaching a sharp contraction in the the actual people alive that are able to work in the key sort of demographic that is the normal workforce, and as well as the generation that was born in the 60s, which is the largest generation, if I recall, from the mid 60s, they have this early retirement level of I believe it's 60 years. So they'll be rolling off into the retired part of the population. So some big tensions there. I just wanted to point that out. So let's go to the macro calendar. And one thing I didn't put on there was the latest on the debt ceiling. That's just so tiresome to talk about. But the latest being that they had a talk, Kevin McCarthy, House Speaker, and Biden yesterday. They both try to put a bit of a positive spin, but you still see statements that from McCarthy that they're still very far apart, but hopeful that they can have something done by the end of the week was one statement. Regardless, it appears that there's some sort of direct negotiation set up between McCarthy and or his side and some part of the Biden White House or officials with the Biden White House that is seen as more likely to produce something than the sort of the grandstanding by the politicians themselves. So we can hope something emerges. We don't know. Biden is heading off to the G7, which starts Friday, a key event risk we've talked much about. Let's see what it produces in terms of these moves against so-called Chinese economic coercion. And he is said to be returning early from that meeting so that they can get so he can meet with McCarthy and others next week on the debt ceiling issue. Of course, we need to track that. Then we have some housing-related stuff from the U.S. today. Again, that 20-year Treasury auction. Australian employment data up overnight. Let's see if that can change the narrative at all for Australia. I think the metals situation is more important there. And then we close out the week tomorrow or tonight. Or sorry, we need to point out Saxo podcast, Saxo Market Call podcast will not be recording tomorrow. So we'll be skipping tomorrow because it is a holiday here in Denmark. So for us, we only have one more day left this week, and that'll be Friday. And you can see the remaining items there on the economic calendar there on slide 8. We were intended to do the Wednesday helicopter editions. We'll be starting that up next week. Stay tuned for that. Let's take a bit of a longer space and time to consider some bigger themes. And on Friday, we'll do round 2 of our listeners edition podcast. And we'll send out a new survey early next week to get more feedback and more questions for the next 2 weeks of the Friday listener editions. So stay tuned for that. Be careful out there. Be aware of the 0 days to expire situation. I think it's there's some kind of trigger risk out there related to all this. It's very difficult to time or to understand what prompts volatility, but something's building here is my sneaking suspicion. We'll see, and we'll be back Friday with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email marketcall@saxobank.com.